Okay, today's daf is daf chet. And last year we ended the Mishnah with saying machra mishkana. If the goy sold all uses a mashko on his avodah zarah, the question is: does the act itself is an act of bittul? Rebbe says it is it's bittul. Chacham says no, not necessarily so. And then we saw different ways to understand exactly when the debate was. The shita we finished with was Rav Zu'ura bar Chanina says Hashem Rav Chanina. That's b'machra l'tzoref or l'tzorech nechloku. When the person's purchased it for his own needs, or if you want to read it as tzoref, that is a smelt, like a smelter. In that situation, the question is when he gave it over and sold in that way, is that considered an act of bittul or not? That's the debate. Aval machra l'ovda. If, however, he sells it to someone, now we read this before in the Temor, we don't know whether he bought it for his own malacha needs. And we don't know, maybe he bought this thing for Avodah Zarah. We don't know. In that situation, in that situation, clearly it's not batel. The act of selling is just transferring his Avodah Zarah from one owner to the next. However, Rabbi Yirmiyah says it's the other way around. He says, no, Rabbi, oh, not really the other way around, but it's different. He shifts a machloket differently. He says, Rabbi Yirmiyah says, B'shem Rav, B'machra lo'ovdeh nechlekuh. When you sell it to someone who's a worshiper of Avodah Zarah, you don't know why he's purchasing it. That is the debate. Avam im machra l'tzoref, if however he's purchasing it, the person purchasing it was purchasing for his own need and the seller was aware of that, then divra kol betela. For example, or l'tzoref. Because clearly the object of Avodah Zarah is going to be melted down or beaten up, whatever. So clearly the act of just selling it is enough of an act of bittul. Okay? That is two ways to understand the debate. Now Rabbi Yaakov Ba'archa says B'shem Rabbi Yochanan, Divrei HaKol Chaya. Divrei HaKol, we don't know. Rabbi Hillel says B'shem Reish Lakish, actually B'machloket. So there's a bit of a gusa change that makes it help helps us understand here. It's divra kol einu betela. Everyone agrees it's not batel. And Rabbi Shimon says, Rabbi says, Rabbi Shimon Lakish is actually machloket. So einu betela, what's this mean? So we see quite clearly the debate, what the case they're talking to because is the machra l'ovdeh, where it's been given over to someone who worships it. Aha, if that's the case, at Rabbi Chinenek Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan that says divra kol, it is einu betela. That aligns with Rav Chanina. Rav Chanina says before, it's l'ovdeya eina batela. The machloket is only if it's like the tzoref. And therefore, also, if that's the case, after Rav Chanina, it's Rav Yocham, the Rav Yirmiyah is like Rish Lakish. Because Rav Lakish says, no, that's the case. Meaning, l'ovdeya, that's when it's a machloket. Okay? But if it was the tzoref, everyone agrees it's batel. Okay, so we're aligning things. The question is, maichadun, what then is up? It seems to be the conclusion. If you, that's one way of understanding the sukugya, and it says, but machra l'tzoref, when it's sold to someone, to be smelted down, that is nechleku, machra l'ovdeya, divra kol ein betela. Who does that sound like? Divra kol, that sounds like Rabbi Yochanan, which also aligns with Rav Chanina. That's the alignment of the debate. Okay, the Gemara now says, avodah zarah she'inucho ovdeya b'shat shalom. I think we had these questions that were sort of coming up in the shir, and we're seeing addressing them a bit by bit now. If objects, idols, were left abandoned in a time of peace, meaning it was a deliberate act to leave them behind, b'shat shalom, then it's muteret. Then it's the assumption is the fact that the worshippers didn't take it with them is because they weren't interested in it anymore. So it's like it's the assumption is it's batel. However, if it was b'shat milchama, if it was left behind in a time of war, the fact that it was left behind is not indication of their being no longer attached to the avodah zarah. It could be the circumstance of war led to the fact that that's why it was left behind. Okay? So therefore, it would still be Asura. Okay? Yafe. Now, the Gemara says, let's go. So let's continue. Bimosiot shel malachim, harei elu mutarim, mipnei shemamdino tam b'shad hashamalachim ovrim. So this needs a little bit of work because we've been talking about these bimosot for such a while. These are these stones on which Avodah Zarah is placed. And we made reference to this bimosot shel malachim. However, the Panei Moshe explains it a bit differently than we saw before. In other words, these bimosot, kolomar, mipnei she'einam miyuchadim loshiv sham avodah zarah kol sha'ah. Meaning these bits, I'll go back one step. These avnei gazit, there's a hewn stone, shemutokenet baderech malach ha'melech. They're generally placed along the way on which was the king's passage. Okay? V'ukamelech over sham, when he passed it, he would take the avodah zarah, place it on it, and then v'mishtachavela and bow. He's sort of. What's it called? These pit stop type of Avodah Zarah stations. Okay. And then why aren't they Asur? Because it says, meaning these are not dedicated platforms for the Avodah Zarah to be seated on. Only when the Malachim came, they would just use it as an ad hoc place to place their Avodah Zarah. Sometimes the Malachim, it might just be that the kings go in another derech and have no regard whatsoever for these little stones that were placed on another road that they're not even going past. And therefore, Hilkach, they're not even Kishim, they're almost like convenience platforms, but they're not considered Mamash Ashim and Meshamshe Avodah Zarah. That's it. That's understanding. Okay, let's continue. Mana says, Avodah. It says, Tani Milchamat Yoshua Asura Milchamat Yoshua Muteret. Milchamat David Muteret, Milchamat David Asura. So even though the Mishnah says if it was left or abandoned, this Avodah Zarah, the Tami Milchama, then it's not clear that it was, so then it's it, the what, that which was left behind is not batel. Okay? If it was left B'Shat Shalom, then you might want to come back for it. You know, I'm sorry, if it was, sorry, start again. If it was B'Shat Shalom, then he could have taken it with him. He decided not to take it with him, and therefore it's banned. Okay, fine. Okay, so the Gemara says, you find though, even though we said Shat Milchama, it depends on the nature of the war. Because in the wars of Yehoshua, sometimes you'd say the Avodah Zarah that was left behind is Asur, and sometimes say it was Muteret. Or Milchama, so therefore you find by Milchamat Yehoshua, when he came to Israel, also Milchamat David as well. Sometimes you'll find the Avodah Zarah that was left behind is Muteret, and sometimes you find it's Asura. So how so? Milchamat Yehoshua is Asura Dichtiv Hachem Tachrimem. That situation with Asur is like when it was Mamash a war and they didn't get a chance to, there was no reprieve for the enemy. So that which was left behind, it wasn't like it was a, like a band, like a, the people defined in the war thought they were going to return home that night. So the Avodah left behind, it wasn't, it was just left behind because they thought they're going to come back to it. But they were fighting a war, they died on the field, and zeu. So therefore, there's no bittul there. However, if it was, when is it muteret? That's Hailasha. There was a particular skirmish, the battle ended, and the fighters, the Avodah Zarah, decided, look, I'm not interested in going back. They could have gone back, and they didn't. And they decided to leave it behind. In that situation, that is where we say that is a, if you like, a act of enough. It's effectively abandoning that Avodah Zarah, and then it's muteret. So let me read in Pnei Moshe to make it clearer, because I'm not sure if I was clear enough. It says, Klomar, Yesh asur rak shnicha ovdeya mipnei milchama. Sometimes you can see that it's actually asur when it's when the people who worship it left it in time of war. That's the milchemet Yehoshua. She had that time lachzor. They thought they're going to go back home. The only ones they left behind is they're not going to take all their avodah zarah with them to the battlefield. Fine. Because that's in that situation, when Yeshua ben Nun, it says you've got to go back to these places and destroy all the avodah zarah. Because the fact they didn't take it with them is an indication that it was mavatel. It's just that they were going to war. They thought they're going to come home, and that's why they left. They didn't take it with them. However, yes, Shahi Muteret, sometimes you find an Avodah Zarah that was left in the time of so-called war with Yoshua, that it isn't Muteret. What were those cases? Seems that there's some sort of like skirmish, that's the way I understand it. And they could have gone back after that small battle. It wasn't a full-on war, it was a battle of some sort. They could have gone home. And they just decided, I'm not interested in this anymore. Ah, okay, that's the situation being more terrible. She is nuha, meaning the war's finished. The could have gone home, and it didn't go home to this Avodah Zarah, so clearly he wasn't interested. So, in other words, what we're trying to understand the Mishnah, even though we say the Shat Milchama, we say it's Asura. What the Gemara is saying, well, it really depends on the context. Because it's not milchama per se that is matir or asurat. It is the nature of what the relationship the person, this Avodah Zarah, had to Avodah Zarah when he left it behind. Didn't think it was going to come back, and therefore he didn't have the opportunity to come back, should be asur. Or did he have the opportunity to go back, and he didn't go back anyway, which means he's not interested anymore. Even in a case of battles and wars. Okay, that is by Yoshua. Why are we in the case of David? Let's continue the Gemara. How so? Milchemet, we just said that one. Milchemet David Muteret, Mashe Haya Itai Agiti Mevatel. If you remember, we saw this before, that he got Itai Giti to go and Mevatel, act as Mevatel of the Odazara that was there. Okay, that's the situation. Be Muteret, because he had a goy to, whatever, what's it called, not a goy to come, it was Mevatel of Odazara. However, the Milchamat David, with when it's Asura, Shei Leolam. Shei Leolam means this is the Milchama that I'll show you this Kolom, and they couldn't go back to the Barazara. And therefore, the fact that it was left behind is only an indication it was abandoned. That just the people that were fighting against it get a chance to go back to it. Okay? And that's why it's still active of Barazara, I call it that. Yofa. Let's now learn the next Mishnah. This is now Halacha Zayin. So now we get more, a bit more philosophic. Shalu et haskenim baromi. Their skin were asked in Rome. There was many stories of the Rabbanim go, the Tanaim going to Rome for different political needs, for interests and things like that. So they were asked in Rome. Im ein rotzono ba'avodah zarah. If that this is the, you know, this is the question posed to them. If you know Hashem is not doesn't want avodah zarah in the world, meaning it doesn't there's no such thing as avodah zarah. There's only one God. Right? Okay. Mivna inu mevatel. Why doesn't Hashem then destroy all this avodah zarah? Mevatel. So Amru lahem, ilu davar she'in tzarech le'olam, po, hayu avdim, hayu mevatlo. If, in other words, if it's true that Avodah Zarah wasn't, didn't have these, sorry, the things that were worshipped, let's say, had no beneficial use to the world, then it's true Hashem would have mevatlo it. But they, for example, they bow to the sun, people bow to the moon. So what, you're going to say Hashem would pluck it out of the world just because some shugayim bow to this thing? So that's why Kadosh Baruch Hu leaves it in the world. Okay, so the fact that they're present in the world is an indication that Hashem's happy with people worshipping it, or that they're, or that there's an indication that they might have chas v'shalom any substance. So, because it says hari avdim lechama, hari lelavana, lekochavim, ulemazalot, the stars, the constellations, these are all very important things that have a benefit to mankind. Laharim ulegvaot. So what you say, Hashem should start flattening mountains because people bow to it. Should Hashem destroy the world and reshape the whole world because of Mishigayim that seem to bow to these things? So the response back was, okay, that's fine. However, Amuleim im ken yoved devar she'en tzorech. If that's the case, okay, there's lots of things that are worshipped in the world. So if, let's just say, okay, Hashem doesn't just, the argument back was, okay, let Hashem not destroy those things that have a benefit to the world. But the things that don't have a benefit, well, if Hashem's not happy with Avodah Zarah, if you know, then he should destroy all those things as well. So the Gemara says, "Amar lehem, af anu machzikin adi. If Hashem selectively destroys some of Avodah Zarah, which you say is not useful to the world, and leaves the R, that's going to embolden and give more confidence to the people to worship, say, the sun and the moon, because they'll say, oh, these have substance. They were left in the world when the other things that didn't have substance were destroyed. Rabbi Yomu Tedu, there must be some sort of force that they've been able to endure. Sha'arei elu batlu ve'elu lo batlu. So therefore, the argument that the Chachamim proposed to the Chachamim of the wise people of Rome was that yes, people worship these things. Yes, the Kadosh Baruch Hu is not happy with things, but the Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to just. In other words, the argument, well, if there's no substitute, then why does Hashem destroy them? Well, no, because there's material benefits to the world for these things: the sun, the moon, the stars, etc. And Hashem's not going to destroy the world. He's not going to get rid of mountains with nice views because someone, Mishugayim, might go up there and start worshipping it. So the Gemara says, we find this elsewhere as well, meaning Shalu et haskenim baromim. So not only in the world of like Avodah Zarah, but also in the world of Averis. For example, Gazal Zera v'Zara. If someone stole, this is a beautiful brisa, which is a, I feel like a corollary of this discussion. It says that, let's say someone stole, someone else's seeds and then planted them. What should, if you think from a, you know, a designer, mural, you know, ethical vantage point of the world should be, he shouldn't benefit from the stealing. So the seeds shouldn't grow. Okay? It says, Gazal zera vazara ein sofa litzmeach. Habaal esh itish. Or someone has a relationship with a, has an affair with a married woman and she gets pregnant. There should be maybe ein sof olo limamzer. Maybe you should make it that they shouldn't be able to conceive in that context, and then the child won't be a mamzer, and the mamzer, all the complexities will happen with this child who's born from this such a relationship, when eventually. So Elano, HaKadosh Baruch said, no, I'm not going to get involved. I'm going to let the world and people have bechira and act accordingly. However, and the shoytim shekilkulu, and those people that take advantage of this and mess things up, they're going to face the consequences. So, okay, let's continue. Amrav Ze'ura, Iluayaktiv, Komoyim Yuavdeyem. This is a different Nadrash. Had the Pasuk says, Komoyim Yuavdeyem. Like them will be those that worship them. It'll be a kasha. Ovdei HaChama kechama. You're trying to say that Ovdei HaChama, those who worship the sun, it says in the future, they'll be Ovdeyem, it says, sorry, Komoyim Yuavdeyem, that they will also radiate. The Ovdei Havana should be like Lavana, that they'll also radiate with some light. That's ridiculous. That's why the pasuk says Ela kumom yoseihem. Now, it's when it says oseihem, oseihem is not making the sun, but meaning the people that make the idols that relate to the so-called god of sun or god little g of moon and things like that. So just as the kumohem meaning these inanimate objects, so too they're dormant, if you like. So too oseihem will be like them. Okay, that's a pasuk. That makes a lot of sense in terms of like so-called the punishment or the eventual end of these people. Amar Rav Mana, ilu ktiv kamoyu ovdeihem. Lo kashi, says Rav Mana, disagrees. Says no, even if it said kamoyu ovdeihem, it wouldn't be a kasha. Because why? Meaning they will be like the sun, those that worship them, because dichtiv v'chafra levana bushachama. That at the end it says, there's an expression that, this is in Yeshayahu, that there will be a busha, there will be a shame that will be felt, if you like, by the lavana and the Chama, meaning the moon and the sun in the future, because of they, if you like, people, they were the means through which Avodah Zarah was committed. Okay? So they will feel a sense of shame in the future. And so too, Komoim you of Dehem, also those people that worship these things will also be shamed in the future. That's how you would explain it. Now, Rav Nachman says, B'sher Ramana, Atid Avodah Zarah liot ba'av rokeket b'fnei ovdeha. In the future, now, again, how you take this with mashal depth or etc. But let's just try it. Let's read the words. In other words, Rav Nachman says in the future of the Avodah Zarah will come and spit in the face of those that worship it. Right, rokeket b'fnei ovdeha umevayashan and embarrass them ubatela me'olam and will be batel from the world. Okay, ma'atam, what's the pasuk? Yavoshu kol ovdei pesel, they will shame those that, you know, it sounds like the Avodah Zarah itself will end up shaming those that worship it. Okay. Now, Rav Nachman says, that in the future, this Avodah Zarah will come and bow before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and then. Why? Because it says, Hishtachavu. Now, it doesn't say Hishtachavu, it says, Hishtachavu lo kol Elohim. So I'll just read the Pnei Moshe because it's important diyuk here. It says, Hishtachavu. It should have said, Yishtachavu mibayilei. Lemichdav, k'dichtiv yevoshu, yishtachavu means in the future, right? V'hishtachavu k'tiv mikvar implies that it would happen in the past, meaning kodem sheyavoshu before the shame v'itbatlu and there will be battle of the world min alam. Yavol they'll come themselves ba'atzmam likro lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu will come to bow before Hashem leman yevoshu and that itself will shame kol ovdeihem gam hem, right? Them and all the worshippers. In other words, I think if you wanted to take it to simple surface level, these people put so much trust in these objects and they find at the end that they're absolutely meaningless. What embarrassment, how much energy they put into it. Okay? I'm sure it's deeper than that, but at a simple level, you can understand it that way. Let's continue. This is Halacha Chet. Gat be'utam min anochri. So this is what's happened. Say, anochri has a wine press. And the way the wine press was structured, there'll be a section where they press the grapes at the top. And I'm sure you've seen this on Teilim, and you see this around Israel all the time. That was a top level, and as they'd press it, either with their feet or whatever tools they used, then it would the water, the wine would run down into a vat down the bottom, like a big bore, it's referred to. Okay, you might the question is, can I purchase this the vat? I mean, it's not vat, so the press, the gabutah that's already pressed at the top, meaning all the wine at the bottom, clearly asur, it's really nesach. But the stuff at the top, we're saying you can korneh, you can purchase those pressed grapes, even if there's wine and sorry, I said wine or the juice sort of the mixed amongst with it, because it doesn't become nesach until it's your redlbor. Okay, so you're able to purchase that, and then you can take the grapes, you can press it, you can do what you want with those grapes. They're completely mutar, even if there's juices running through it. And we know the guy's been touching these things. Okay? No, because it's only considered yain nesach once this grape or the juice goes all the way down to the board down the bottom. Okay? That's a din. So that's why it says, Lo king gabba utamin anorchi afal pishu no tel biador, even if he's handling these things and taking the grapes and putting a lot of tapuach, like mounding it up, like putting it in a big pile. Okay? Einunase yain nesach. Because it doesn't become a nesach, as I explained, ad shi yared labor, until it got this juice always so it runs all the way down to the vat down the bottom, or the pit down the bottom. Yared labor, once it goes down to the bor, masha babor asur, that which is in the bor is asur, or masha av hashar, everything at the top is mutar. Okay, that's a distinction. You know, that's when it becomes a nesach, when it goes down to the bottom. Okay. You have a question? No? No?
It's simply that you would say then that the whole mechanism itself, meaning the stone, should never become avodah zarah, even if it's made for a purpose of
What
nesach.
once again, what do you mean? The stone?
If you're saying here you have these people are miyached this
The
produce,
grapes.
yeah,
Yeah, the grapes.
to make yayin nesach.
Yeah.
But it hasn't become Yayin Nesach yet. So you're saying the fact that they're miyachedotam is irrelevant.
Interesting. I'm not sure if we're talking about whether it was Miyached or not. I don't know.
How could it not be?
But the point I don't the question I don't know I don't and I'm not sure if it matters but the point
And the great press itself, the press itself. And the
yes yeah,
top.
so, well the point is it's not considered asim u'shamim nesach at the top that's for sure that's halacha okay
Certainly the funnel and the ramp where it runs down on, or the tzinor, whatever you want to call it, at that point, the guy really has in mind the void is there for sure.
But it doesn't matter. It's only considered yain that it can become yain nesach once it funnels all the way down into this bor. It goes hatzig into the bor. That's
See what the Mishnah
a cutoff.
is saying? Why? That's why.
Sorry.
Okay, never mind.
All right. We'll I think some of these details might clear as we go along. You'll see. It says, "Lochin gab." This is going to Gemara now. "Lochin gab be'uta, Tani Rab Chanan, v'hu shelo elim Israel et enov mimeno." So, in other words, when do we say you can take all this the grapes from the top? That's when Israel didn't watch the whole process. Because if you didn't see the whole process, then you can't. Now, what's the concern? It pretty much doesn't say very much. The article here quotes a Tosfot, and he says what would happen actually is that the wine would funnel, again, go down the track, if you like, the slope. I'm not sure if it's such a funnel, but a slope, and it all goes all the way down to the bottom thing. But towards the bottom, there was like almost like a basket sieve there to catch any stray grapes that may have sort of gone down the slide. Let's put it that way. And that would sort of kind of, if you like, rest by the bore at the bottom. Now, if you're not watching, and the concern is that it will collect, that's plenty of grapes. He might take that collection and take it back to the top again. Okay? But those grapes may have already been in contact with the wine down the bottom that's considered Yain Nesach. Okay? That's the concern of Hilim and Nav. That's the concern if you're not watching, if you're not, you didn't watch the whole process, because effectively, our assumption to this stage is everything up top is fine, everything at the bottom is problematic. And the assumption is that everything, it stayed separate. But potentially there could have been a loop in the chain where it's taken some of the grapes and the or the pressed or bits that sort of slid down to the bottom and to take it on top then and it's called a balagan there. It made it all mixed together. So that's why the article here explains why that if you helim and not mimeno, then it could be problematic. You can't buy the thing at the top. Okay, that made a lot of sense. Net says, Ad kunuchiano tel yain banavim kechad tapuach. That's when do we say that it's not a problem? That's when he's taking the wine and the grapes, sort of like, as he's like grabbing all this stuff on the top, and it's like keep on bunching it together, all the grapes on the top level, he's doing it all together. He hasn't sort of filtered between the two. Aval, he says, this is the next thing. If, however, he's already splitting and separating between the wine at the top, like the juices that are coming out, and the grapes at the top, then you already can, it sounds like here, could already be considered Yain Nesach, even the stuff at the top. So I think what's becoming a bit more clear now is that even if there's juice sort of coming out, the reason why it's not considered Yayin Nesach while it's at the top is because it's all mixed together. It's only once it's mamash completely separated, that's when it can start becoming Yayin Nesach. Okay? Now the Gemara says, Afilu mina motar gumiyot shetachat eshkolot. Here, there's a few gears to change. Motarot shebitzidein asurot. But not just that. Even it says if there's some depressions underneath the grapes, the clusters of grapes, any juice that collects there that we mutar, but any, if you like, if there's some depressions at the top level, they have some wine collected it, and there's grape next to it. So and there's no, I think the article added here that there's no like bits and pieces in it, so it's a much already separated. Or at the top level, even small depressions, not even massive areas, zones that can already be considered Ayin Nesach, even at the top. It's almost having like mini borot at the top. So Rabbi Yossi Bar Bun says b'shem Rabbi Yochanan, hen atzman naaseh yayin nesach. Meaning, even the gumiyot, even the sort of the wine that's below the eshkolot, you take them out, they're considered yayin, what's underneath it's yayin nesach. Okay, how that works, how does this, you know, this whole, how you get gabuta, I'm not 100% sure. Let's continue. Gat shepekaka goy mibifnim asur, v'shebechutz muteret, she'i efshar shelo hasham shifa achat tulala v'nogat ba omenasech kamo habor. So I'm going to read here the Pnei Moshe to explain. It says gat shepekaka goy. So we've got a gat, a press. This tongue, again, it was in the top section. Shebo stakim. There's a lot of cracks in it. Upakaka, and it's been, and the goy is coming to do repair works on it. If he starts doing the repair works, let's say the cracks on the inside of the gat, you can imagine it's got like a rim and things like that. Then that's going to be a problem. Why? Meaning there's, it's impossible, there won't be one little tzedek, one little crack. So a depression of some sort that has nishar kanus betocho some wine without any grapes. And if he touches it, it's going to be considered shelabor. So what's going to happen is you've got your own gut. You're not purchasing from the goy. You've got the gut at the top, the bor at the bottom, it's all working nicely. However, there's some sort of, it got some sort of cracks and damage. You get the repair to come and it's an avodah zarah. If the cracks on the outside and he's touching the outside, it's not a problem. If he's starting to do cracks on the inside, there could be some depressions or some collections of wine, which we said already, based on what we've been saying now, they themselves can be considered, become Yayin Nesach. So as he's working, they might touch a little few, a bit, for some of these collections. Or it's not just might, it's assumed he will touch it. I mean, it's impossible there won't be some collections there. And that becomes Yayin Nesach, and Yayin Nesach is going to also be mashu, it's going to ruin the whole thing. Okay, so be careful your trades in that. Okay, so we'll continue. We'll leave him in next year. Go